The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Okay, Tom, I just wanted to share two interesting events that took place on Sunday, just to share with the listeners. First of all, the event that took place in the Vatican City, which of course was the inauguration of Pope Leo XIV, the first first U.S. citizen to become pope. And from an Israeli point of view, Israel was represented by President Isaac Herzog at the inauguration, along with a delegation, I understand, of Jewish rabbinical and lay leaders who attended the ceremony. And President Herzog was noticeable with his yellow ribbon and with a sticker that he had stuck on his jacket with the number 590, which represents, of course, 590 days of hostages being held in Gaza and 590 days of the war. It was also noticeable that the Pope didn't mention the Israeli hostages in Gaza, even though he did mention the war in Gaza and was praying for an end to the war and to the suffering in Gaza, which I think we can all subscribe to quite easily, as long as our hostages are released, of course, and we are left with safety and security. And I understand that there was a meeting yesterday between the Pope and the Jewish delegation, including President Herzog. We also saw a picture of President Herzog shaking hands with U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance. So he had an opportunity to meet with people around the edges of that a ceremony. And it was noticeable, of course, that for the funeral of Pope Francis, the Israeli delegation was much, much lower key. And I think that this is a hope, an indication of a hope, at least, that the relationship with the Vatican under the new Pope might be a little more fruitful and a little bit more understanding from the new Pope. So President Herzog was there in order to bring our hopes and to show the respect for the new Pope. Let's hope that that works out. The other thing that I wanted to mention about Sunday was that that was the day that marked 60 years since the famous Israeli spy in Damascus, Eli Cohen, was executed. And the day was marked very, very fascinatingly by a meeting between Prime Minister Netanyahu and Nadia Cohen, who is the widow of Eli Cohen and still lives in Tel Aviv. They had a meeting at the Prime Minister's office, and the Prime Minister handed to Nadia and shared with her 2,500 documents and personal items belonging to her late husband and the famous Israeli spy, Eli Cohen. These were items and documents that were recently returned to Israel from Syria that were recovered in a covert operation carried out by the Mossad and in cooperation with other foreign intelligence organizations. They managed somehow with the fall of the Assad regime, they've managed to somehow mount an operation to extract this file, Eli Cohen's file, from Damascus and bring home all of these documents and these items which belong to Eli, including the keys to his apartment in Damascus, which were confiscated by the Syrian intelligence when he was arrested. They also brought home handwritten letters that Eli Cohen had written to his family, proof of some of the communications that had gone on between Eli and the senior Syrian officials, photographs that were taken of him during his years undercover in Syria, forged passports, his original will, which apparently was drafted just hours before he was hanged. And there was also a file called Nadia Cohen. And apparently this was a thick orange envelope, a thick orange folder, which had Nadia Cohen written on it. And it contained surveillance records tracking Nadia's movements and her efforts to secure international intervention, including letters that apparently she had sent to world leaders and to the Syrian president, pleading for Eli Cohen's release. So this was an amazing kind of full circle coming around exactly 60 years after Eli Cohen was hanged in Damascus, very famously. For those people who don't know the story about Eli Cohen, you should go and find it. And get the movie with Sacha Baron Cohen called Our Man in Damascus. They are all worth studying, and it's an incredible story. And just to see these original artifacts being returned to Israel, I think is just an amazing thing.
It really is amazing. The Operation Gideon's Chariot continues with intensity in the Gaza Strip. So what is the latest here? Because the pressure from around the world, social media, even Israel activists, is something that is enormously, enormously intense at the moment.
So just to update, when I spoke to you yesterday, I speculated because of the rumors that there might have been some sort of an operation mounted to try to release hostages. Nothing further has been mentioned or reported about that, and I presume, therefore, that those rumors have been proved to be false, that nothing like that happened yesterday, at least as far as we know, and those rumors seem to have been put to bed and calmed down a little. Unfortunately, in the meantime, we also have news of an IDF soldier who was killed in the northern Gaza Strip, Sergeant Yosef Yehuda Shirak. He was only 22 years old and had been married only 7 months ago. So this is a great tragedy for his family and for all of us that he has been killed. And even though we don't quite know the circumstances surrounding his death, there are reports that suggest that his death might have resulted from friendly fire rather than at the hands of one of our enemies. So, of course, our condolences do go to him, to his family, and we all feel the pain each time we lose somebody who is really an Israeli hero going out in order to protect our country. But what we know from yesterday is that a lot of operation around the Khan Yunus area, we understand that civilians were cleared out of the Khan Yunus area quite forcefully in order, again, to try to prevent civilian casualties. The international community, instead of saying Israel is doing everything that it can by moving civilians out to prevent civilian casualties, instead they say civilians are being forced by Israel to move away from their homes, and presenting it, of course, in a very negative light. These are all reports that we have come to expect and we have become quite accustomed to. And I think it's important for listeners just to understand how to interpret the messages that are being sent out. This is a real attempt not to try to clear people away from their homes, because the IDF could relatively easily probably undertake the same operation with those civilians in the surrounding areas. This is a concerted effort to try and prevent casualties, collateral, as they like to call it, people who are not involved and who shouldn't be involved and should be cleared away from the area. So there was quite a forceful attempt yesterday to move civilians away from what seemed to be a very, very intense activity by the IDF. They were working also around some of the hospitals, which we know have been used for terror activities. We know that there were attempts to try to kidnap, to try to arrest, rather than kidnap, but to try to arrest some of the terrorists who were involved in either planning October the 7th, carrying out activities on October the 7th, or indeed involved in the war that has raged since then. Some of them were successfully arrested, including some of the members of their family. Some of them were not successfully arrested and were killed as part of the operation in order to prevent them from getting away. And I should also just make listeners aware of the fact that members of the family of one particular terrorist were arrested yesterday, were taken into Israeli custody. And by the end of yesterday, some of the members of that family had already been released back to the Gaza Strip. So this is not a case of we are just arresting people to try to hold them illegally against international laws. Hamas had the audacity to echo out yesterday, holding civilians in this way contradicts international law. Yeah, we know all about that. But those people who were not of interest to Israel were simply released right away back to the Gaza Strip. So all of that activity is continuing. There seems to still be some sort of a strategy of holding on to significant pieces of the Gaza Strip in order to avoid terrorists re-infiltrating those areas when the IDF clears out, because we've seen that many, many places that have previously been cleared out were re-infiltrated again and have been used again to conduct terror activities. And I think the IDF is also trying to say this is an area where our hostages are not currently being held, and really giving many less options in terms of where the hostages may be held, in order somehow to try to put greater pressure on Hamas to secure their release. There were aid trucks that were allowed into the Gaza Strip in an attempt to try to police the distribution of that aid, that it should go to the right people rather than to allow Hamas to take control of it and to increase their strength and to increase the suffering of civilians in Gaza. So these were all activities that went on yesterday under the guise of operation, the latest operation, Gideon's Chariots, ongoing in Gaza and still ongoing today. We do know that there has been a lot of pressure put on Israel not to continue this operation. But I think it is noticeable that it does somehow increase the pressure on Hamas all the time. And I think the strategy right now is to try to negotiate for the release of our hostages as if though there is no war being waged in Gaza, and to wage war in Gaza as if though there are no negotiations ongoing for the release of our hostages, both tracks in parallel, full force ahead in each particular case. And there have been comments, more than one comment, which suggests that the operations in Gaza do somehow contribute towards putting pressure on Hamas to come to an agreement to release our hostages. And that's really much of what this is all about.
So what is likely to happen with regard to this, or the impact of this Canadian, UK, France statement to sanction Israel?
I know you have a discussion in probably another hour or so with Andrew Fox about this. So I'm sure that listeners will be able to tune in and get his point of view, which I'm sure will be quite interesting. My point of view on this is that somehow there is certainly an element of international pressure building, whether it be the rumors that were published in the Washington Post about President Trump threatening that he will withdraw support from Israel if the war is not ended, if it's the UK, France and Canada coming out saying we will put sanctions on Israel. It seems to kind of almost echo the attitude that President Trump has taken towards Ukraine, where he seems to have forgotten that the Ukrainian war started with Russia's invasion. That bit kind of seems to be removed from the current negotiations and the current pressures that are being placed upon Ukraine to somehow come to an agreement. And I think the same is true for us. That seems to have set some sort of a precedent, because all of a sudden the international community seems to have forgotten that this started on October the 7th. So as far as they're concerned, they're looking at events that have taken place on October the 8th or the 9th and subsequent to that, where Israel has been very, very active in retaliating and trying to secure the release of hostages and to secure peace and security for Israelis. And in so doing, many, many people in Gaza have been inconvenienced, homes have been destroyed, families have been destroyed, people have been killed. We acknowledge all of that, but really, one of the things that they seem to forget is that Hamas are really to blame, and they somehow blame Israel and think that all of this is now within Israel's gifts and somehow by stopping the war and declaring a ceasefire without securing the release of our hostages will be helpful to Israel, to the Middle East, and to the world at large. And I take issue with that. I disagree. I think that that will be immensely damaging. I don't really think that sanctions from the UK, France, and Canada will be very damaging to Israel. I mean, nobody wants to have sanctions imposed, and nobody wants to be the victim of criticism by the international community. None of that is particularly helpful. But I also don't believe that it's going to be particularly damaging. The problem is that there is this body of opinion that seems to be building within the European Union. And if the rumors in the Washington Post are to be believed, then it feels as if the President Trump is also becoming a little frustrated with the lack of progress in this area. But I think what's quite interesting for me is that both Adam Bula and Steve Witkoff, the US's special representatives, are active at the moment in negotiating for the release of the hostages. And even over the weekend, there was suddenly a spike of optimism that Hamas may be willing to accept a proposal that had been put forward by Steve Witkoff, the US representative, and had been sanctioned by the Israeli government, which involved the release, I think, of 10 living hostages and also the release of 16 or 17 bodies of those who are no longer alive and being held in Gaza in return for a period of quiet of approximately 2 months, and during that time to continue to negotiate what happens after that. Hamas, of course, rejected this. And it shouldn't come as a big surprise to us that Hamas rejected it, even though Steve Witkoff was a little surprised. He thought that they would accept it. But Hamas really have one main objective out of all of this, and this is to remain in power and to remain a threat to Israel after the ceasefire and after all the dust has settled. And of course, that will never be something that Israel is willing to give.